You're listening to the Real Recruiting Story Podcast, where current college baseball players reflect on the recruiting process. Every player has a personal story that hasn't been shared until now. The quest to get committed by a college doesn't have to be a difficult journey. Mark Wright has coached dozens of high school baseball players, helping literally hundreds of showcase players navigate the next chapter of their careers. And now, here's your host, Mark Wright.
Our guest today is Kyle Wright, former shortstop at the College of William & Mary. During his senior year of high school, Kyle received the All-State Virginia High School League Achievement Award Scholarship because of his academic and two-sport accolades, baseball and basketball. He still holds the best fielding percentage in his school's history, with a perfect fielding percentage in high school for two consecutive seasons. Offensively, he finished batting .345 in high school. He still holds the infield arm velocity record at the Perfect Game Atlantic Coast Showcase, throwing 91 across the infield after his sophomore year. He played shortstop his entire collegiate career at William & Mary. He made his collegiate debut versus Charlotte, where he registered his first college hit, and then he registered his first collegiate home run at the end of the season in the CAA tournament, going 2-for-4 against the College of Charleston. During his collegiate career, he earned himself a championship ring in 2016 when the Tribe won its second ever CAA championship. And in 2018, he helped the Tribe finish 5th in the nation in double play turns right on the heels of Arizona State. Kyle bookended his career much like the beginning. He started all 55 games in his senior campaign. He homered on senior day, and then he started all 4 games of the CAA tournament where he registered multiple hits. He would finish his collegiate career with a .235 batting average and a .940 fielding percentage. Welcome to the show, Kyle Wright.
All right, so let's get after it today. Hey, Kyle, how you doing, man?
Good, how you doing?
Good, so why don't you tell us where are you recording from?
Are you just going to act like you're not my dad? I'm literally the same exact person as Kyle Schofield and Caroline.
You always call me Coach Wright.
I know, but I'm saying you acted like I was just another normal.
Come on. So tell us where you're actually recording from and what have you been doing just lately in the COVID environment before we get after this.
I'm recording from my new place in Falls Church, Virginia. I just moved here recently, and it's nice during the whole coronavirus thing actually to settle in. I've been very busy working out in my backyard, and that's about it. So I'm looking forward to doing more baseball and doing more work.
All right, well, we're going to do some baseball stuff here. We're going to ask you for the first time in a while, probably reflect on your recruiting process. Why don't we just start off with it? Why don't you just give us a high-level overview? How would you summarize your recruiting process in 2 minutes or less, from start to finish? Imagine that's the only time we have. How would you depict your recruiting process?
I think I was pretty fortunate, and I think a lot of kids would have liked to have my recruiting experience because I did not realize I was actually that good until offers kind of started hitting me in the face after the summer of my sophomore year. I went down to East Cobb, Georgia, and I was playing on a highly competitive travel team. I vividly remember getting a call from Coach Penzino, who's now at Army, who was at William & Mary at the time, and I was supposed to give him a call and try to set up a visit. I set up a visit with William & Mary when I got back from East Cobb. I went on my visit, got an offer. I did not accept it at the time. I had a few more weeks to kind of wait on it and go to some other camps. And during that time, I got a few other offers and a lot of other coaches calling me. I went to some bigger camps like Virginia Tech. I realized that my offer was good. I went back to William & Mary and met with Coach Penzino and accepted my scholarship.
So when you said you went to bigger camps, you're implying, when you say bigger, is that implies like Power 5 conference for people that might not otherwise know? So if William & Mary's qualified as a mid-major, you then were looking to possibly go to bigger conferences. Is that why you went to Tech? Because they're both in-state, so you can't necessarily say like any other way to differentiate it. Is it because it was a Power 5?
That would be exactly why. I think initially Virginia Tech, UVA, and Duke were my top 3 schools that I was interested in, and they all happened to be in the ACC, aka Power 5 conference, or bigger, like you said.
So you go to Virginia Tech camp. You already have Bird in hand, right? Did you have your offers then?
Yep.
You go to Virginia Tech. You try to play well. What ends up happening?
I played very well. I played very, very well. I vividly remember having two or three hits in our inner squad. My mother took me down there and we were like, wow, that was about as good as it could go. And I remember talking to Coach Hughes at the time after the camp, and he was just like, yeah, you look good. We look forward to coming out and seeing you in your high school season in the spring. Meanwhile, this was in like August. So I was like, wow. So I guess I wasn't as good as I thought I was, or it just made me realize how valued I was with Coach Benzino. And that's why I went back to Lincoln.
So you say that now, because I think that probably what makes sense, the whole hindsight 2020.
Yes.
Now you look back and you were more valued. But if you went back then, is that what you thought about? Is that why you came to those terms? Or was it because you just finally conceded? You're like, well, I won't be able to play at Virginia Tech. Because I think I know the irony from looking at some of the stats. You end up, of course, like all mid majors playing Power Fives at some point. And possibly, I don't think it's too big a leap of faith, you may have some of your better stats, ironically, against Virginia Tech, just if you were going to go stat track, you playing in the Power Five. That being said, did you concede you couldn't play there, or did you already have the epiphany and come to terms that you just thought, you know what, someone wants me more? What was it? Was it a combination of it? How does it play out?
I think it's a classic risk and reward. I had a very, very good scholarship offer at a school that I valued. I had already knew that I wanted to go to a highly academic institute and play at a high level of baseball. William & Mary is one of the better mid-major conferences in the country. So I had a good offer already in hand, and I was risking the possibility of going to a school that I at the time thought I could still play at, but it was like, is it truly worth it in the long run? So, I mean, you're talking to a, 16-year-old brain right now, you know, and looking back at it, I probably still thought I could play at Virginia Tech, and I probably could have. I put on probably 15, 20 pounds that next year, but I went with a coach that appreciated me, and everything that he had said ended up working out. They valued me there and I played there, so.
So you said something there that really triggers with me a lot when I talk to people. You talked about putting on 15 pounds. Because when I've watched baseball, and I've had the pleasure of watching it on the West Coast, and I've seen Oregon play and San Diego and been around the country. And what I believe the difference is you look at a mid-major shortstop, or take any position for that matter. What I find remarkable to me is the Power Five conferences, it's not that anybody necessarily can move any faster, that their arms are that much. They are. What's remarkable to me is everyone's so much bigger and they do it. So that first baseman's really big guy and just as flexible as the lanky guy who plays there in the mid-major. And the shortstop still looks like he could beat out anybody in a shuttle run, but he's built like a tight end. Would you agree with that? That the Power Five guys just are literally just seem to be bigger? I know that there's more to it, but do you think there's a large part of that? Just they're bigger people?
100%. I think it's good to preface that they're bigger at the point in time of their college recruiting process, because I still don't know the names of the infielders that committed to UVA that were my class. Charlie Cody and Jack Gershaheimer were already 6'1", 180. Meanwhile, Kyle was 5'7" and maybe a 130 soaking wet, you know, like at the time that I recruited. So like those kids were already at the point in which they were going to be juniors in college, you know, and then you go look at their perfect game profile. Like you said, they're already throwing 90 across the infield. They already have like some crazy exit velos. So I guess back to your other question, maybe I did see those things and I was like, okay, those guys are committed to UVA. I'm not there right now. Maybe this is the right level for me type of thing. And I think data, it's cool the world we live in, you can look at those things and there's no one that's going to go to UVA or Virginia Tech that isn't going to have certain measurables, you know? And I think we're getting a little bit away from the big point. Your answer, though, is yes, everyone is big that commits to a Power Five school at that point.
So one last thing on this topic. Out of all, you said you were talking to other schools. What is the most obscure school that showed interest in you?
I remember it may have been right before I committed. It may have been literally a day or two before I committed. I got a message from Rice out in Texas. I remember getting a email from them, and it wasn't like a specific just camp email. It was saying they'd see me down in Georgia.
Interesting. So had Rice had been in the mix earlier, would that have been given consideration?
I mean, I think it'd be hard not to, but with that being said, it's funny how things work out. I had never even debated Rice being one of my schools I would ever go to, and the amount of emails and the list I had created of possible schools to go to even as a sophomore, there's no way that name was ever on my list. So it's just ironic that a good school like that popped in right at the last second.
So you talk about lists. Did you ever have any parameters set as far as either you or those put on you by your family? I mean, what did you have any geographic limitations? Could you have literally gone to school on the West Coast? Was that open on the table?
I don't think I really had any limitations. I might have put some self-limitations and I wanted to go somewhere that wasn't really anywhere north. I think I might have set my limitations on like Maryland Terps. You know, yeah, I was like, man, yeah. Anything above that, it's probably going to get a little too cold for me. But I don't think as a family we ever set any sort of geographic, like, no, you can't go anywhere. It was, like I said, it was pretty early on in the process. So I think it was more so trying to get realistic schools. And I think the realistic schools ended up being schools closer to the geographic location. But I don't think I was ever told or ever thought, like, hey, if someone from College of Charleston down in South Carolina, like, hey, that ends up being pretty far. I don't think that was ever a thing.
I think what ends up happening, particularly in your case, you got the moms that get involved. And the reality is, not that dads don't want to see their boys, but moms, I think, in the recruiting process in particular, want to be able to make those drives. So I think what you'll find is there's a lot of kids who will get steered, like you said, maybe just using what you said, College of Charleston, maybe that's as far south as you should go. Why? Because that's probably the most practical drive. Like, yeah. Once you start getting past there, you start getting people from Northern Virginia, at least, who have to start looking at getting on, you know, planes, a lot of plane tickets, a lot of plane tickets playing. So yeah. The geography, you know, comes into it for sure. Going back through the process, I mean, I know it's changed a little bit in recent years, but showcase recruiting events, you know, the equivalent of Perfect Game was big when you were there. I think PBR maybe had started, I'm not sure. But when you think about showcase recruiting events and just camps, going to camps, what would you think? And again, I know the evolution changed, but even now you're in a unique position. You've coached showcase teams and you got high-end guys that you coach in high school. What would you think if you had to give somebody advice? Is there one that's better than the other? Should you go to a national showcase event or should you go to a college camp if you had a pick?
So the question is between national showcase event or college event.
Yep. Or, I mean, if you want to be Switzerland and can justify why they're both appropriate, that's fine.
Yeah. I mean, I think everyone's situations are different. I don't think it would be bad to go to one of those big events like a PBR or Perfect Game one time. And I preface with once, because once you get up there, your stats are up there and you can Google Kyle Wright right now and my Perfect Game stuff from 2013, 2014 is still up there. So I think that money's worth it. Yeah. Because your info will always be out there.
But if that's a good point. So now what if you go to that event
I know
one time and then you don't have good stats? Cause you just said you can Google and find your stats. So what if some well-intended kid goes there and then does, hey, that's not my 60 or my arm's not that. You own that stat then, is that correct?
That is correct. Now, what I was going to preface it with, and you said a well-intended kid. I think well-intended, I think everybody probably wants to do well when they go there. But it goes back to our conversation before about measurables and doing stuff on your own, where like, if you want to go to UVA or Virginia Tech, and you do your arm velo across the diamond, and you're throwing 78, I would argue it is not well-intended to go to PBR and do your showcase, because you're not suddenly going to throw 88 across the diamond, you know? And if that's happening, and it pops up on PBR that you throw 78, you're not going to go to UVA Virginia Tech. I can say that with pure confidence that that's not going to happen. So I would argue going to that showcase that one time, you just choose wisely in terms of train by yourself. Get to the point where you know what your body's like. You know, I would suggest probably junior year if you haven't committed already. Once you've already done a few local throwing arm velo stuff, training at your own facility, you've hit off a tee with the pocket radar with your dad or a buddy, and you know that you can hit 88 off the tee. You know, like doing stuff beforehand. So yeah, I'm sure you'll get nervous and there'll be a little bit of variability between 2 to 3 miles per hour. But you should know going into there what you're kind of going to show.
What stood out for you? Why did you get recruited, you think? You said earlier that you weren't a big guy. You talked about being, you know, wet out of the shower. You only weighed 150 pounds. So why did colleges recruit you? Why were you getting phone calls? Why were you talking to colleges?
I threw hard across the infield.
Did you grow up with an arm all the time that was that big?
Definitely not.
So how did you get it?
Long toss. Jaeger bands had just become pretty big when I was a freshman or sophomore in high school, I want to say. So a lot of Jaeger bands, a lot of long toss, and I preface the long toss with the pull down piece. A lot of pull downs. I vividly remember my arm being super tired, and I had to feel the difference between my arm hurting and my arm being sore because I just worked it out a lot. So I made a big jump in my velo across the infield, and then I was good defensively, really, really good defensively. So it just added to that piece of the puzzle.
You said something that's really big, I think, and the difference, it's hard to tell the difference between sore and tired, and that gets confused probably. I feel bad for pitchers, I think, sometimes, because they probably have a tougher time getting on a regimented program, particularly if you're a pitcher who's like a middle relief guy, you're on a showcase team, a position player like yourself. In season, it might be a little typical, but out of season, even particularly, you're just regimented, right? You're going to throw X amount this day, and it's very prescriptive. And if you follow that prescription, I've heard the long toss, obviously, from several people, that could be that magic pill that actually works. There's not too much to it, really. I think it's one of the easier things to actually accomplish, as opposed to someone saying, I want to hit home runs. Mm-hmm. Or I want to throw, I want to have a better spin rate. I think there's a lot that has to be put into that. I think ultimately the prescription to a big arm isn't as complicated as people think sometimes.
Yeah, I believe Alan Jaeger has a quote that's like, you want to throw hard, throw far. If you want to throw healthy, throw a lot.
That's good. I like that. Thinking back to your phone calls, when you're on the phone, how did you handle your phone calls, you think, from beginning to end? Whether you got recruited a little earlier, so, some people might have upwards of 30 phone calls where you may have had, 10 total out of your phone calls. Do you think you progressively got better, or did you come out of the gates blazing on that first phone call? What was that first phone call like? Can you remember where you were? Why don't you take us to that? The first phone call, where are you physically, and how do you think you did, if you can draw yourself back there?
I mean, if I had to guess, I did not do good, and I probably had marbles in my mouth if I had to.
Do you remember where you were or anything? Can you give us a little bit more insight?
I was in the hotel in Georgia. I don't know, probably Marriott, the amount of Marriott. I believe I was in a Marriott in Georgia, and I took the call from Coach Pinzino. Well, I called him, actually. He didn't call me due to NCAA rules, I believe.
What was more nerve-wracking, that phone call or infield in, can't let a runner score, knock the ball down and get the out?
The call, by far. You knew what I was going to say to that.
Yeah, of course I did. Yeah, absolutely.
It all happened so fast, too. And with that being, we had done a really good job of laying out the amount of schools we wanted to go to, what was going to happen, camps that were possibilities, and then boom, it was like, call me. And I was like, what me? So if I remember correctly, I think I wrote out on a sheet of paper the things that I wanted to talk about. That sounds right. I'm almost positive I called.
Not sure you hit all the points, but yeah, I do remember that.
I'm pretty sure I called my mom, and she acted as if she was Jamie Pinzino.
She probably made you feel like you sounded great, though, and you
could. Yeah, of course she did.
All right, let's fast forward and just talk a little bit about college, and let's talk your arrival. So, like most people, most freshmen are big men on campus as seniors, let alone juniors, and some of you guys are stud players and you're sophomores in high school. You arrive. What's the environment like? You're finally at college. You've been a stud all through high school. How'd you find yourself in that mixing bowl trying to get acclimated, and how'd you feel, and what do you think you could have done better, or did you knock it out of the park, the first couple of days or weeks?
I definitely didn't knock it out of the park. I vividly remember my first college practice. I made 3 errors and Brian Murphy yelled at me, and it was my first day. So I remember that didn't go well. And now it also going, I'm a pretty confident person, very, very confident. And I was playing shortstop behind Tim Hohen, who was probably all CAA his first year. And then Colin Large, who's playing for the Blue Jays as we speak. So those were the 3 shortstops. And I remember that. And I was confident, but of course there were nerves. You get to this place and you're like, wow, I ain't the big man on campus no more, With all that being said, I stuck it out. It was one practice, kept a little perspective, and I actually ended up playing really, really good the rest of the fall.
So let's shift away from baseball. What about the acclimation for social life? How social life, and how do you balance that with baseball? Whether it's fall, spring, and just say overall, give me a big macro over the 4 years. How does it happen? Is it possible? Do you think you had a social life? Were you cheated because you played baseball?
No, I absolutely had a social life. And I think it's actually probably pretty similar whether or not you're at William & Mary or let's go back at Virginia Tech, you know, two completely different campuses. I think the athletes almost anywhere tend to stick together. And my roommate was Rob White. We played on the same travel baseball team together. So I kind of had an easy friend as I walked in, you know, and the group of freshmen that we had were all pretty similar. And I was fortunate enough from that aspect, but we would hang out with different lacrosse, soccer, football, you know, like all the other different teams. I think you do that because the athletes understand your time. You know, they understand that you have to do your school. You see them at the study hall because everyone freshman year has the study halls. And then if you want to go out the weekend, you get to hang out with them as well. Do I think it's a little different if you go to Virginia Tech or JMU? Yeah, because you can go out to a bunch of other fraternities and sororities and downtown and do whatever it is. But the athletes tend to stick together from the few people I've talked to on different teams through summer balls and stuff like that.
So summer ball, let's talk about summer ball. How does that work? How's that play out? Most people in the recruiting process they think you just get there and they don't take into account the whole fall season, strength training, what you do over breaks, let alone summer. That's so far away. What's summer baseball like, and how does it happen?
So collegiate summer baseball, there are multiple leagues across the country in which you go and play and you live with a host family. I played in Martinsville, Virginia one summer, which was in Southwest Virginia. I'd be shocked if anybody knows where that is, except for maybe the Martinsville Speedway, you know? So I played there one summer. I played for the Peninsula Pilots in Hampton, Virginia. The Valley League, a lot of people probably know the Cal Ripken League from Northern Virginia. Either way, you go and you live with a host family and you play a pretty long season against other teams, probably roughly 8 to 12, depending on the size of the league, and you play with kids from other colleges.
What's the environment like when you compare typical, you know, season to summer baseball? Not competition level. I want to hear more. Just what's the environment like generally, the day-to-day?
Yeah, completely lighthearted. And I feel as if it's supposed to be about your own development as well. You know, I mean, I've heard a few horror stories about like some coaches being a little too crazy and stuff. But I think generally speaking, summer baseball is about the development, your own development. So there's a lot of like early work where you do BP with the coaches that are on staff there. You are trying to get better, get at bats, so you are ready for the next season. And then I think it's pretty lighthearted in terms of, yes, you do want to win the championship, but it's like there's no tie to winning the championship. It's just you're playing well to help your team.
Good stuff. Help the team. So let's go with this. So how would you help a prospect? You've got, the more we've been sitting here, you've been able to think about some of the stuff. I've got your brain swirling. Right now, what would be the best advice that you could give a kid who's trying to go through the recruiting process and they feel like they're just never going to get recruited? What would you tell them?
I tell them a few things. Number one is that coaches very rarely miss. Like, if you're really good, like you're going to get recruited, you know? So that goes back to my other statement where focus a lot of your time and energy instead of paying this money, in my personal opinion, to go to some of these camps and these big events, spend your money on personal development. You know, like the amount of money you could pay on a nutritional program or a weight and a strength and conditioning coach or doing infield or hitting lessons, whatever it may be, I think that is very valuable as you're young. So I would say spend your money on that. Realize that coaches don't miss. Be realistic with yourself. Like I said, you can go on to that's a cool thing about PBR and Perfect Game right now. You can go on there, and if you're committed to UVA, I'm telling you, there's no way you throw 78 across the infield. There's no way. You know, like your 60 time is below a 7-0 if you're an infielder. You know, and if it's 7-0, I guarantee you that person's probably 6'2 and 180 pounds and just hit 15 home runs during the summer ball season. you know? So be realistic with yourself. Realize coaches don't miss very often. Spend your money on the right type of things and really try to put a lot of focus and energy when it's time to get in the college recruiting process. I'd say going into your sophomore, junior year, put a lot of emphasis on taking onus on the situation by emailing coaches, by doing your research in terms of what type of schools are best for you. You asked me about limitations with our family, if there's any limitations in terms of money, location, the academics, all those things. So that was four things. That was pretty freaking good, if you ask me.
That is good. All right, we're just going to finish with a quick lighthearted lightning round. Cool. Give me your gut replies here.
Lightning round, okay.
All right, I'll give you a question. You got to answer it within 3 seconds. If not, we'll just move on to the next question. For you, what was your favorite dugout snack?
Bubblegum.
Okay. Weighted balls or no weighted balls?
Weighted balls.
Would you prefer to eat a large meal between doubleheaders or after the game?
Between.
What's your favorite food on the road?
Jimmy John's.
And then pregame music, not walk up. What would you listen to in general if you had to go to go-to songs back in the day?
Hip hop.
All right. And then lastly, now put on your coach's hat because you've had a couple opportunities to coach both in showcase, travel, and high school. What is your favorite thing about a player? What do you gravitate towards as a coach?
I love seeing players get there early and work out later. I think it says a lot about their work ethic. I like seeing the grind.
Perfect. Well, we appreciate it. Thanks, buddy. I'm sure I'll talk to you real soon, dude.
Yeah, I'm sure you will.
All right. Later, man.
Subscribe to this podcast via iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Please tune into our next episode, and thanks for listening.